Blog Talk Radio.
Nalema kulila misozi, nikayanga na banja latu. Kupadwa tinabadwa mushe, koma lelo lipazulika. Nikale tinakalapo kondwela, lelo heka, titikumbukila kweta chokela. Amai kubutika mutima, koma zoti tazisoa. Nimaona misozi masomwake, nimavuto abale nimavuto.
Good morning from burning hot Dallas, Texas, on this August Sun Saturday the 8th, and thank you for joining us from wherever you are listening us from. It's 10 a.m. in Texas, and it's, I believe, 4 p.m. in London, 1700 hours in Zambia, where our special guest is joining us from, and our friends in the other part of the world in Perth, Australia. It's 11 p.m. We do appreciate everybody joining us. We have a great show, a great discussion. We'll be talking about issues of governments, democracy, elections, constitution making process with a very dear lady and a special friend of mine, with Gladys, my wife. And I'm so excited that we have Laura with us here on the show today, and we'll be crossing over to Lusaka as we begin our hot discussion here this morning, and talk about quite a number of things. Okay, we've promoted it on social media. We've talked about this for days and days. And joining us from Lusaka, Zambia is Laura Miti. A lot of people may not know that Laura is a social activist with vast experience in advocacy for work through Zambian civil society. Some of you remember Lucy Sichone. Laura was part of Lucy Sichone's team when they started, I forget the name of the organization, but she'll remind us. Okay, she's been involved in constitutional review processes, an ardent writer, columnist. She's written a lot for Zambian, both Zambian and South African newspapers. I can go on and on and talking about that, but I want us to get straight into the discussion because we have a lot of things to talk about here. Let me say good afternoon to our guest. Laura, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Hello, Nathan. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. It's been long overdue. I'm sure you'll agree.
Yeah,
it's
I guess.
It's been long overdue. Yes, I believe so. I have my colleagues here, the lady that connected you, Matilda Lucas. She's part of the Zambia Block Talk Radio team. Roger Chari in Canada is also going to be part of the discussion.
Right.
Our consulting and senior advisor, Dr. Patrick Wilson, is also going to be part of the discussion.
Okay.
Priscilla is also supposed to call in, and other people. Laura, let me begin by saying this. Zambia has had six presidents, five of them under what we call a multi-party democracy system. We've been ruled by three political parties. And to be honest with you, we haven't seen any significant change in political ideology, economic policy. We still continue to see, even under the multi-party democracy system, Laura, we have seen abuse of the Public Order Act, multiple by-elections, persecution and prosecution of opponents. I can go on. Party violence, top-heavy cabinet, removal of presidential immunity on two or three presidential candidates. What is our problem, Laura?
Oh, well, that's quite a list.
It is.
I think our problem is the citizenry. I think as a rule, as Zambians, we are waiting for a benevolent leader. So we expect leaders to give us what we want or to rule in accordance to our constitution out of goodwill. So I tend to think that as citizens, we do not hold our leaders to account as much as we should, and we do not let them know enough that they should serve at our pleasure. So it's like the roles have been switched. In a real democracy, those in power should have a sense of fear, should I say, of the citizenry, of the electorate. In Zambia, we've switched that role. So as soon as someone becomes president, they go from essentially being looked down on to God overnight. You know, and I think a very good example is Lungu, you know, President Edgar Lungu. You know, it was like just before the election, before President Sata died, he was just another minister.
Yes.
He comes into office, and now when you listen to anyone on radio, the other ministers, some civil society organizations, when they talk about how great he is, how good he has been for Zambia, you think to yourself, when? What has he really done? You see, so I think that what needs to change is the mindset of the electorate, less of the politicians. Because politicians, I keep saying, give only as much as is demanded of them. In Zambia, very little is demanded, therefore they give very little.
Yeah. That's a good one. I like that response. Let me tell my colleagues, Roger, Dr. Patrick, Matilda, if you want to jump in at any point, please be at liberty to do that. I want us to make this a flowing conversation so that we keep it interesting and just engaged. And good morning to Waria in Oregon and everybody that has called in. We're so glad that you're part of the discussion. Laura, you've made a very interesting point. We do not hold our leaders accountable. What will it take for the citizens of Zambia? And I fully agree with you, because the area in our discussion, my friend Roger here, who is part of this panel, threw a question to me to say, does GBM really have influence in Northern Province? And my argument is, it's us, the citizens, who are the problem. What will it take to reverse the laws for the citizens to take back their authority as democracy entails?
I'm actually not very sure what it will take, because we seem to have taken steps backwards. That's what worries me. I think after 1991, we had a very alert citizen, which is why we were able to stop President Chiluba from going for a third term.
Yes.
And then I think even under Mwanawasa, around the constitution, the initial demand for the constitution, you had a very vibrant civil society, and you had a sense that there are certain things that Zambia will not accept. I get the sense that we seem to have taken many steps backward. And the PF is having probably the easiest rule ever. Because my personal opinion is that the PF government is the worst we've ever had. And I mean this objectively, it's not even personal, you know. They break so many rules. And yet they seem to be having a much easier ride than administrations before. So my opinion again is that we are now bearing the brunt, or we're now paying the price for a broken educational system, for example. You know, we have a much less educated population in real terms. No, I'm not talking about now the numbers of graduates or the numbers of people who finish grade 12, but the quality of the of the graduate we are producing, the quality of citizen we are producing, is that they are less engaged, they are less informed in real terms. So if you talk about just talking, I don't think there's a more garrulous population in SADC. Zambians talk every single morning on radio. You get, there's everybody making phone calls. So there's not a sense of fear, as it were. Zambians don't fear authority. I think for that you can grant that to our government, that generally we have a population that feels that they can say what they want, so they make phone calls. But it's the content. So the understanding of what government is supposed to be seems to be going backwards. So you get a lot more of give President Lungwe a chance. What does that mean? give President Lungwe a chance. So I think that, I don't know whether it was initially deliberate, but the breaking down of our education system is producing a citizen that can be subdued or can fail to hold government to account in a way that the generation before did. And I think that's very worrying. Listen to the University of Zambia and what comes out of it. Again, the level of engagement there has gone south in a way that is really heartbreaking, because you rarely hear critical engagement coming out of the university. The level of engagement coming out of civil society as well, you see. So it seems like we need a whole mind shift as a country.
Laura, this is Dr. Patrick. I would like to bounce two thoughts off of you and get your position or perspective. With respect to the educational system, I'm thinking along the terms of a brain drain. We have experts, well-trained Zambians that are leaving for, as they say, better pastures. And as a result of that, the educational level that you're speaking of, most of that is being sucked away by other nations, and they're prospering in other nations. But if the brain drain wasn't happening, you would have the fruits of the Zambia educational system still in Zambia. That's the first thought I want you to expound on. And the second thought is, do you think it would be a good idea to have a semi-annual come together, whereas you have individuals talking about the positive steps that's been taken by President Lungu, as well as the steps that had not been taken and should have been taken, a forum to address the positives and negatives?
I think in terms of the education system, the brain drain has happened. And I think it's happened worldwide almost, especially in Africa. Let's say in SADC, we're not the only country that has suffered a brain drain. But what I'm talking about is the quality of education that a child receives between grade 1 and grade 12. When they reach grade 12, their level of engagement, their ability to analyze issues, I think, has gone backwards. And I don't think that is entirely about the brain drain. It's a dumping down of the curriculum, even, I think. You have a situation in which you have grade 12s coming out who cannot write as well as their parents. Now, that's wrong. You know, they cannot engage at the level of their parents, because then you should expect that the generations are getting better. If you see what I mean, so you have. I think, let me give an example. Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe has had probably the worst brain drain known of recent times during the economic downturn. All right. But the Zimbabwean grade 12 is not like the Zambian grade 12. They still have maintained a good education system so that when their citizens are leaving the country, and they're coming out with an education that is functional, while ours is not. So I think that one of the biggest crises in this country is the crisis of education. And nobody seems to realize it because, you know, we are in a situation of, you know, the one-eyed person being king among the blind. We don't know how bad it is, you see. And I, when it comes to the question of having a,
Laura,
a gathering.
Laura, before you go to that one, give me one solution to what you've just spoken of and I applaud you for pointing that out because that is a serious system and there's a serious problem there. How do we resolve that? Give me one way of doing it.
We need to go back to the basics in the curriculum. You know, right down to the basics. Reading, writing, math, but also broaden the curriculum. You see, the Zambian education system has become extremely academic. It's about children passing the math, for example. But the critical thinking is just not there. So the curriculum needs to change. Our language skills are going backwards. So you feel that you need an emergency response. But it will need those within the education sector identifying this as a crisis, and I don't get that sense. I don't get that sense because when you say these people, I think people are offended when you say essentially that we are producing almost mentally challenged children. I mean, I don't mean talk to an 8 year old. You know, talk to an 8 year old Zambian child in grade 3 or grade 4. There is an age appropriate level of engagement. That is just not there. And one of the reasons, I think, is language. But that's a whole different conversation, which I'm always going on. We have a problem in language in that most Zambians, most middle-class Zambians, have chosen to speak to their children in English as the first language, in homes. All right? And as a result, okay, let me put this way. Parents who do not have English as their first language speak to their children in English, if you see what I mean. So as a result, the children are being retarded linguistically. It's a problem across the country. So if you listen to our writing, I mean, if you read our writing, if you listen to us on radio, we cannot express ourselves as a nation. Because while we are losing our own languages, we are not adopting a first language proficiency of the language we have picked up. That is a problem. You see, so I think that it's such a critical issue that needs the experts within the education sector to realize what is happening to a whole generation of children. So, yeah.
Laura, I'd like to bring you back to your opening statement to Nathan's question. You had mentioned that we as Zambians don't demand or don't ask too much of our politicians. This brings me back to voter education or awareness. Do the voters throughout Zambia, and I'm not just referring to those who are in Lusaka, Copperbelt, and certain parts of the southern province, or Western province, but there are people throughout Zambia who I personally feel are not aware or don't know how to ask of their politicians. You know, the politicians do come with a very good information to give us and we get excited, but we don't demand too much of our politicians. How can we change that around in terms of election or voter awareness?
In terms of voter rights, I've parked the other question. I still remember, so I'll get back to it, because there's a question about the whether we should engage every so often.
Mm-hmm.
But let me answer the one on voter education first. I think that the manner in which voter education happens a lot of money, let me say, before every election is used towards voter education, but I don't think it gets the critical message across. So what is happening now is that voters are staying away from the polls in order to punish the politician, which is really shooting our collective selves in the foot, if you see what I mean. So there is a real sense of disillusionment among the electorate. But I think that understanding of the power of the vote to change our daily lives is not understood. And some of the organizations that I'm involved with are trying to change that, in that the vote is seen as a means of changing who is in office. But citizens don't seem to understand that they can also use the vote. They should link their vote to the way the country has been managed. So the link between the vote and service delivery is absent. And also, yes. I think the Zambians failed to hold their leaders to account in between the periods of the vote. That's where our problem is. Because I think when you talk about the power of the vote to change who is in office, Zambians are very good at that. And I think we are talking about that, our democracy is quite mature. Because if you talk to any Zambian on the street, they will tell you something to the effect of, they will see in 2021, they will see in 2016. And I think Zambians understand that they have the power to vote for someone and put them in state house, and that the MP in that vein serves at their pleasure. But then the question then becomes, so now you've changed the individual in state house, or you've changed the individual in parliament. How does that change your life? That is where our problem is. And that it is that accountability I'm talking about. Because I doubt very, very much that right now a president can stay in state house a day longer than Zambians want them to. And I think President Lungu has discovered that when he tried to test the waters about changing the election date in 2016. I think he quickly pulled back, because that is one line that he has seemed not to allow a president to cross. So they understand that you are in state house because we allowed you to be. But what it is that you do when you're in state house, now that is... They just don't seem to understand that they can do a lot more about that as well. So I think the problem we have is not so much that we have bad leaders or that we are unable to change government or to bestow electoral mandate. That we are very good at. But we need now to say, when you are in state house or when you are in parliament or when you're running an administration, you need to run it to our interest. Now that doesn't happen, because it seems that everybody who goes into state house immediately begins to enjoy the ride. You know, you don't get gray hairs in state house in Zambia. You know, that's a smooth ride. Your only problem is just before the election, you begin to panic. So like you've seen President Lungu now begin to panic because the election is about to come. After August 2016, he gets the next mandate and now Christmas again. You see what I mean? So you have a long Christmas and a little bit of a problem just before the election. And that needs to change.
Laura, let me... this is Roger in Canada. Let me agree with you. Let me agree with you on the critical thinking of our people and their education. I've made some arguments with a lot of my friends on Facebook. Let's talk about two things, taxes and borrowing. On taxes, people are doing their best, go to the, I don't know, that market you have in Lusaka, they work hard, after they do whatever they have to do, they go to ShopRite, they are paying VAT, and part of that VAT is financing government. And then we see our president is in the plane every time, going everywhere, using hard-earned money by our people. Now, our people cannot make that connection. This is money I worked for very, very hard. And here is a president who is on the plane just about every time. How much does that cost? Question I'm asking, I don't know if it's a question or a comment to you, as a civil society, are we demanding ourselves enough information to give the public, which they can work with? Say, for instance, this is how much it costs for the president to go to Malawi. Last time he went in the hotel to run the plane. This is how much it was. And this money came from the people who pay taxes. And therefore, people can make that connection that my VAT, this is how it was spent when President Lungu went to Nigeria or when he does this fight. I'm talking about this because it happens here in Canada, in this province where I am, in Alberta. The premier goes somewhere. When he comes back, if he used to drink a cup of tea, he's going to put on the website the account for everything, how they spent the money. It is on the website for people to see. So as a civil society, I don't know if we are doing enough to give information, to give ammunition to the people to work with. On borrowing, I've always said, each time we hear government is borrowing, we should know that they are taking power away from the people. They are not accountable, therefore, to us anymore. They are accountable to the people who are giving them checks. And therefore, we have no standing as a nation. As we see this borrowing go on every day, or we have received $50 million from ADB from here. That is power being taken away from us. Question again is, how much ammunition are we giving our people to work with, Laura?
You know, I totally agree with you on that issue, the question of educating the public. To make the link between public resource management and their daily lives. You see, and as well as taxation. For example, when Zambians talk about taxpayers, they're usually talking about those who are in formal employment, and yet everybody pays VAT, like you said. In fact, yesterday I was talking to a group of unemployed women, and I asked them, where does the government get money from, you know? And I tried to make them understand that as long as you are in Zambia, you are a taxpayer, because for every loaf of bread you buy, or something, well, I don't know whether bread is VAT rated, but I'm saying whatever you buy, then you're paying VAT. Now, if it is that link that is required, and I think a few organizations are beginning to speak about that. You know, the issue of leaking government expenditure to service delivery failure, for example, or weakness. So, for example, let me give an example of the Auditor General's report. Every year, you have an Auditor General's report that brings out some really mind-boggling losses, and accountability issues. You know, where you find that millions and millions of kwacha just going to this black hole of abuse. And it's not even necessarily that money is being stolen. It's just mismanaged. Mm-hmm. So you have a case in which ZRA failed to collect so many billions, or unretired interest, and that kind of thing. Now, what needs to be done is for citizens to understand that for every kwacha that is abused that way, that is one Panadol not bought, for example. That is one class room not built. For example, so you have government schools with 120 children in the classroom. Citizens just don't link President Lungu's next trip to that crowded classroom. You know, every time President Lungu takes a trip, now here in Lusaka, the way you know that President Lungu is going out is that the from State House all the way to the airport will have a policeman or policewoman standing, I think, almost every second meter. There's someone standing the whole day. The whole day. Someone will be standing there. There will be these, what they call, advance parties, post parties. I think whenever the president just walks out of that, the amount of money we spend. What citizens need to know is to link each of those trips, which could still happen at a lower cost. There's no reason why we have a whole battalion of police people on the street when President Lungu is traveling, because we are wasting money that could be used to build maybe even another police post in an area where people are suffering from security issues, you see. And I totally agree with you that until that link is made, citizens will not be able to hold their government to account, because it becomes academic. You understand what you're talking about when you're saying hold the government to account. But they need to know that when your child dies on the queue at UTH because the queue is too long, or there was no ORS, a child who had diarrhea, link that to President Lungu or the minister's next trip to get their temperature checked in South Africa. So if I say to myself, if the Minister of Health had not gone to have his temperature checked in South Africa, and instead had their temperature checked at UTH, maybe my child would have survived. You see, it is that link that is failing. I've been asking, since President Chiruba, who brought in this new style of going for treatment abroad, until now with President Lungu, nobody seems to know how much money we have spent from our fiscus, taking president, his relatives, and everybody and their friends and everybody connected to be treated abroad. How many UTHs could we have built? If not another hospital, why can't we have a world-class unit at UTH, which nobody but the president uses? Okay, let's say the president doesn't want to share his bed with ordinary mortals. That's okay. But let's build him this special bed. Let's buy him this special bed here, because that saves us air tickets. It saves us the escorting party. The escorting party for these guys is huge every time they go abroad. So, yes, those linkages are just not being made. And you need more people speaking about it for the ordinary citizen. Because it's no use talking heads talking about it. It's until the person on the street understands that their child died because President Lungu went for treatment to England that change will happen.
Mm. You are listening to Zambia Blog Talk Radio. Our featured guest this morning from North America is Laura Miti, a renowned social activist and columnist for various Zambian and South African newspapers. Laura, I'm switching gears here now. We're going to be talking about the Constitution. First, can you remind me the name of that organization which worked together with the late Sichone?
Zambia Civic Education Association.
Education Association. Yes, I forgot the name of the guy. Laura, let's talk about the Constitution. What is the issue, or what really is the difference between this being done through Parliament and the whole thing being adopted through a referendum? What are the pros and cons? Somebody out there needs to understand what's happening here.
All right. Let me talk about the referendum. The advantage of the referendum is that it validates the process. It gives the people the right to say, that is our constitution. So it's essentially like a vote. If a constitution goes through a referendum, then the people have given themselves the constitution. Now that is the advantage. But to bring the discussion to the situation we find ourselves in right now, I am one of the few people who agrees with government that we should take what we can to Parliament. See, the reason for that is, if government says we are taking non-contentious clauses that are of critical importance to our democracy, my mind fails to understand why not. Nobody has explained to me why not. So on that point, you see, a few days ago, they published the provisions, the clauses in the Constitution that they'd like to take to Parliament.
Yes.
I'm finding it difficult to understand why civil society refuses to engage with that process. Because if we say we get dual citizenship, if we say we get the running mate, if we say, mm-hmm. like I saw in that the draft, from now on, when a president dies, we don't have a by-election. I don't understand how that hurts the country. I really don't understand. Because I think we can still have both. Why is it that civil society believes that they need to put pressure on government for the whole constitution to go through a mm-hmm. referendum, and putting pressure on government to take the rest of the constitution through a referendum takes less energy? If you see what I'm trying to say, why don't we let what can be changed go through parliament and still continue to put pressure on government to take the Bill of Rights through a referendum? The point is, if we don't change the constitution now, you know, if we don't change what we can change now, we are going to go through another election on the basis of this flawed constitution. It's a case of a starving family saying, no, unless you give me a whole loaf, I'm not going to have the half loaf you're giving to me. You see? So I think that what is important is to say to government, what exactly are the non-contentious clauses? For me, one of the things that I think should be changed immediately is our accountability legislation. For example, we can immediately change the way we manage our resources. We don't need a referendum for that. And we also need to understand that a referendum can give you a very bad document. Because it's a yes and no vote. There are certain uh-huh. things that are technical in that constitution that will get a no vote. Because people just don't understand that. You see? So I think okay. that we should engage with government. And I'm 100% behind taking non-contentious clauses through parliament. Because I still do, nobody has convinced me as to how that is bad for the country.
So, Laura, when they are saying they're going to take this thing through parliament, they are not making any amendments to the draft. They are not adding anything to the draft. All they are doing is selecting certain portions of the draft constitution and passing them. Is that right? Or you can correct the situation?
Now that is my understanding. And that is where we must engage them. You see,
yes.
what we need to do is now, like for me, what I would like, I wish someone could give me the money to have a conference where we sit down and just read that whole bill they produce. Go through it with a fine-tooth comb and make sure they're not sneaking anything in. If they're not sneaking anything in, why are we refusing it? Because it's our draft. You see, you understand? I feel that our energies are being misdirected. So we must not allow government to believe that once it goes through parliament, we are giving up on the referendum. Because we are not. We want our referendum. We want the Bill of Rights changed. We want socio-economic rights within the Bill of Rights. So for me, I want a referendum. But I just don't understand why we can't change what we can change. Mm-hmm. And also ensure that nothing goes in that was not in the draft.
So,
I think that's where our energy is directed.
Okay. So therefore, from our discussion and my understanding is that's why when you and I had the conversation before you came on, I really want us to get mm-hmm. this clear, Laura, because the impression civil society is giving is that if this goes through parliament, there are going to be changes and things amended to the constitution, to the draft. That's the impression I get when I read. I mean, I've got the whole statement which the chairperson for the Grand Coalition for People Driven Constitution, Father Leonard Ichiti, I have it in front of me here. I'm looking at it right now. The impression I'm getting is that if it goes through parliament, there will be amendments made to the draft constitution. It's that's the impression. I don't know if everybody is getting that impression here. I don't know. Matilda, Dr. Patrick, Roger, who else? Clotilda, Dr. Chongo, Titus. I mean, every warrior, everybody who has called in. Is that warrior has done a lot of things on the Constitution, and if she has anything to add on here, she can. That's the impression I'm getting. If it goes through Parliament, things will be taken away or things will be added on to suit the PF. That's the impression, Laura.
You see, now that is the impression. See, what has happened is nobody has engaged on this particular issue. No one has. The bill came out a few days ago. There's been absolute silence. You cannot refuse to read the bill. It doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make academic sense. It doesn't make intellectual sense. Look at the bill and argue on that basis. Because if they snuck in even one point that was not there before, we should refuse to allow it to go in. But we can't refuse it. We can't just refuse for what was in the draft to go through. You see how these are two different arguments. Because yes. I totally agree that if anything is snuck in that was not there, government does not have the right to do that. But I don't agree that government does not have the right to take what it can through Parliament. But what is happening now is the conversation is skewed. We have refused to engage. You see? And yet, like you say, there is that suggestion. I have not heard anywhere where President Lungu or anybody has suggested that they want to take anything other than what is in the draft. But if President Lungu and the PF are trying to do that, then no way. You see? So we should refuse. But we can't just refuse without engaging, without reading. Who has read this thing? Nobody. The Grand Coalition says that, from what I heard, unless I'm wrong, I've not heard them say, this is our problem. Look at this bill. It is flawed this way. Now, that kind of engagement, I think, is not good for the country. You can't just refuse and say, this is how we want it to be. Therefore, any other change, we will not engage with. I find that problematic.
Constitution, the recently crowned Paramount Chief Chitimukuru had an interview with ZNBC. I don't know whether you had an opportunity to watch it. I'm reading this on online media. And Chief Chitimukuru says that we are putting too much energy and time into the Constitution, and yet it is not going to solve all our problems. That's what he says. He says, use the word the panacea, which is basically meaning remedy for all ills and difficulties. I tend to agree with him to a certain extent. Laura, I don't know what your comment to this will be. I don't think our politicians even respect the Constitution.
Where I disagree with that, Nathan, is that you must have a good constitution. Because, like we saw when President Sata died,
yes.
You need a strong basic law. The fact that someone is not respecting it does not mean the constitution is not important. It means that you have a constitutional problem. You have a problem with constitutionality in the country. But nobody should even suggest that the constitution is not an important document. So, it is very important for us to have a very good constitution. And also, it is important for us to understand that in the constitution, there's more than just a political question of 50% plus one. In fact, for me, what is important for me now is the socio-economic issues in the constitution. We will be unable to prevent this public resource waste that we are seeing if we don't change the constitution. And you see, citizens and civil society and lawyers and everybody need a solid ground under their feet from which to launch engagement with the government. You see, if I can go to the president and say that the constitution says when you go for your trips for treatment, let's say there was such a clause, it must be shown that you are able to get that treatment in Zambia. Now that's not there in the but I'm giving you as an example. The fact is, it can be ignored, but civil society and citizens can begin to engage government and to demand that that constitutional provision is respected. So it is very important that we get a good constitution. But I don't think we should just continue to throw money at an endless review process and refuse to have any advances. I'm one person who thinks that the PF government is absolutely obnoxious. But I don't believe in arguing with what makes sense. In this case, I totally agree with the route that the PF is taking in this. And the first time President Lungu said it, I said yes, I like that. Because for some reason, it makes sense to me. What I would argue with is any changes in the draft. But picking clauses in the draft that we all agree with and passing them through Parliament, I think makes sense. While still insisting that everything else that is contentious must go through a referendum.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Walia?
Yes, thank you. Hi, Auntie Laura. This is Walia.
Hi, Walia.
How are you? Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
So on this issue of the Constitution, you and I have talked about this before, and I'm also in agreement with you. I don't see a reason why we shouldn't be open to the fact that there are certain things that don't have to wait until the next election. And for me, the one major thing that I would like to see is a provision that requires that we have a running mate for every presidential candidate. We've had two presidents die in office, which have led to two very expensive by-elections. And so for me, it's enough. Twice is enough. And I think that's something we should have for the next election. So whoever wins next year should have their running mate. So then if that person then dies in office or is impeached or is found unsuitable for, to be in office, that's fine. We would have a vice president who can take over, and you have the proper succession plan. And that, for me, should not have to wait for 2016 to be in a referendum, because what will happen then? Whoever wins, be it Hakainde, Nawakwi, or Winter Kabimba, can come back and say, wait, that provision does not apply to me because I was voted into office on a different constitution. So I don't have a running mate. So if I die, we can maneuver the election like we've done the last two times. And so that's why, I've been trying to make sense of this whole constitution bill, because I think it came out earlier this week on Tuesday or Wednesday, and it was so hard to even find a copy, and the copy that I found was only half a page. So I don't even know where this full document is. And, following social media, all these online papers, nobody's even talking about it. So I'm like, wait a second, this bill is out. Are we going to comment on it, or are we just going to say, we don't want to be part of it because it's not a referendum? And then this is where we get stuck. And then when they sneak things in, we're caught at the 11th hour saying, you see, they've dribbled us. No, they haven't dribbled us. We should have been there at the table.
You
we should have been
yourself.
Responding to them. Yes, we've dribbled ourselves. So instead of just complaining, it's like, exactly. So I'm very disappointed. People that I see who should be leading this conversation have just put their head in the ground to say, we don't want to be a part of it. And, and for me, those are the people who should be helping lead the discussion to say, okay, this is a very healthy issue. This is how it's going to benefit the Zambian people. This makes sense. And so then to make sure we then start petitioning MPs, be it UPND, PF, or whoever else is in there, to say, this is a clause that makes sense, please support it. Or, no, this does not make sense, and this is why you should not support it. But we're not even going to have that conversation. And then we'll get dribbled at the end because we're not part of the conversation. And it's so very frustrating. So, but Laura, what can we do? I mean, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I think we have a lot of people who are old, who have become jaded, and they don't see past their own needs. They're not responding to the fact that there's a lot of people out there. We're talking about Zambians who lack critical thinking, not to diss our own people, but yes, we do have people who don't understand very basic things. And we have to help those people because at the end of the day, it affects every one of us. Me sitting here in Oregon, you sitting there in Kanyama, these things affect us because at the end of the day, it's Zambia. Thank you.
Exactly. And you know what I've been looking for, Walia? You know, I made a few phone calls when that thing, when the bill came out. I'm trying to get someone to just even fund a small gathering of people to read it. To read it. And you don't need many. You need 10 people read it and then read it on radio. You know, all you need is something like 15,000 kwacha. If people could put money together, let's do it. We need to read that bill and begin to engage government from that point. You know, I tweeted, I think at some point, I said, but why isn't anyone commenting? I'm amazed. You know, on the day people are talking about Cecil the Lion. You know what I mean? the bill... my country. People, the government has produced the bill. You cannot refuse to read it. It doesn't matter. Anything that's put in writing, if it's sent to you, you can't refuse to read it. And then if it is passed, you come and say, no, I signed this thing without knowing. It is wrong. And I think that civil society must engage. If not civil society, citizens. Let's have this conversation. Let's go through it, you know. And I've been wanting to maybe through my through Twitter, go clause by clause and begin to discuss it. But that's Twitter. How many people are you talking to?
Yeah,
you see,
that's right.
You see what I mean? But we need the conversation. We need a conversation, and someone has to lead it.
Yeah, Laura, does this draft constitution address? Like the Chitimukulu said, okay, does this draft constitution address the issue of public resource wastefulness? Because that's my concern. If there's anything I hate with a passion, everybody who listens to this forum frequently, they know how I hate by-elections. Does this draft constitution address public resource wastefulness?
You know, public resource money in the draft was addressed. I looked at it. I can't remember exactly, but it still had major holes. But there's some changes there that are pretty progressive. There's still a whole lot more that needs to come in. The issue of the by-elections, I haven't reached that point yet. I heard someone suggest the by-elections are in this bill, which were not in the draft, because the draft, one of the main issues that people brought up, they did not want by-elections. And I hear that's probably been snuck in, but I need to check. I don't want to say anything about something I have not read. But I know that the running mate is there. I saw that. There's a running mate in this bill that the government is suggesting. If the president dies, the vice president takes over. If the vice president cannot, only then does the speaker take over and you have a by-election. You see, that's what the suggestion is that the president has a running mate. If he dies or she dies, the vice president takes over. But only if the vice president, who is then deemed as elected together with the president, cannot take over, then the speaker takes over, and then you have a by-election, which makes sense, because the speaker would not have been elected. Please explain to me why we would refuse to have that go through parliament.
It's very straightforward, very simple.
Exactly. So like what I was saying, some things can't wait. Let's not insist, let's not throw out the baby with the bath water, to use a cliche. Let's not do that. You know, let's sit down and look at this bill, and especially read it for what might have been included that's not in the draft.
Excellent. Well, we're running out of time. I'm going to allow quick area code 618. Please make your comment or question very, very briefly. We've run out of time.
Yeah. You know, the whole thing that has been discussed hinges on one critical thing. And
your name, please?
Dr. Kalonde.
Dr. Kalonde, welcome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The critical thing is what was discussed earlier. Education. If people are not educated and the people are still illiterate, all this that we are discussing wouldn't have been done by parliament or by whichever party goes into office. The biggest problem that we have is what the other person is discussing. Critical thinking is missing, and if that part of education is missing, then we have the problem of not being able to see where we have flaws in our system.
Mm.
The citizens are not being given what they're supposed to be given. And as such, our education is not doing what it's supposed to do. And since it's not doing what it's supposed to do, the politicians, the sad part is, okay, let's put the constitution to the politicians and to the people that are in parliament. Are they even capable of understanding what they are doing? That is one big issue also. There are people in parliament that can't even read the first, even the preamble of the constitution. They can't even read it.
Yeah. You see? So, and I need to stop you there, Rakalo, because we're running out of time. Titus, okay. You want to make your comment or question?
Yes, just a quick
very
one.
Very quick,
on following up.
One minute, please. We've run out of time.
My problem I'm having is that even Parliament itself is a questionable thing. There are people that are bought, and we are talking about these two-thirds. I think we need another clause of what kind of two-thirds are you getting? Because you can jiggle the two-thirds. It can be the true two-thirds or a bought two-thirds. Remember the removing of the immunity of President Biden.
Okay. Laura, thank you for taking the time to be with us. Your final comment or words, especially for those living in these parts of the world, what should we do? What should we do to get involved in this process?
I think engage, and let's not jump on bandwagons. You know, there are no permanent positions. We must not refuse to engage. Yes, sometimes we have annoying politicians, but it doesn't mean that when an annoying politician makes a progressive move, we should just refuse. Let's engage. It's about the country. It's never about any politician. If it's good for the country, let's do it.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I know, you see, what I wanted us to do, instead of me asking all the questions, I wanted to make it as a conversation so that everybody brings in different things. Laura, thank you for taking the time, and I shall definitely be calling upon you. Please don't make me look for you like a needle again.
I'm so sorry, Nathan. It was a hectic week. And thank you, Waria, for making the connection. I think Nathan was just...
No, Waria warned me that you were busy and everything else. I mean, I just wanted to say that just as to end on a good note. We do thank you for taking the time and for giving us a great discussion. Everybody, thanks for taking the time. Next weekend, we'll be talking to Ricky Ililonga. Waria, do you remember Ricky? She dropped. Mrs. Lucas, do you remember Ricky Ililonga? Okay. Roger, do you remember Ricky Ililonga?
Yes, I remember Ricky.
Yeah, we'll be talking to Ricky next week. Laura, say hi to them, and sorry about the load shedding.
No, we'll have to find a way of surviving, eh?
That's true. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Yeah, you too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Tate wanga ineo, moyo wachinja mama neo. Mtawi zonte alikumova, kudibe tawi yonakubaba.
Kumona kukuipiri, kitoko
na mumufolo. Hamama inei, nizi wanda zota nizi. Taeza talema, na yuma pempelo. Atika pena sikulina. Azati kumbukila oye Chifu kwa lelo Bantu bonse basoweza ulemu atate imwe Mulungu munisungile banja. Oh.
ngankale osangalala Zuba ingatoki talema na pepo Kapena mbale wanga Azazi wakuti akula Azazi otawa mavuto Alimumanja mwake Kapena zaziwa Kuti afu niko limba Chifukwa ni mwamuna Afu niko vuti kila banja Kuti ni bambo wa nyumba Elo atatae wana Siunga ziwe Aza kutunga kutogoro Popo
Bye.